Welcome to the Quilt Fiction Story Guild podcast, a podcast exclusively for members of the Quilt Fiction Story Guild. I'm Frances O'Rourke Dow, and we're reading my work-in-progress friendship album, 1934. Thank you for joining us, and as always, thank you for being part of the Quilt Fiction community. Now, on to the story. Chapter 13. Florence held the invitation in her hand and laughed at the formality of it. The Kitty Faircloth she'd known back in her Oberlin days was not the sort of woman who sent out luncheon invitations on thick, creamy cards. At Oberlin, Kitty had been known far and wide as a prankster, a bit of a wild one, the star of the annual dance pageant. If she wanted you to join her for lunch, why, she'd throw rocks at your dormitory window until you stuck your head out to see who was making all that racket. Well, she was Kitty Faircloth Wexler now, Florence reminded herself, taking a sip of coffee and looking out the rain-spattered kitchen window to the green world outside. That made her one of the richest women in Ohio. No doubt she'd been tamed by the Wexlers, whose money was in mines, both coal and lead, and whose wealth had been utterly unmolested by the fluctuations of the stock market. Kitty's mother-in-law liked to imply that the Wexlers' blood flowed a royal blue, but everyone knew that was true only if you considered robber barons royalty. These days, Kitty lived in a mansion in Bexley, just outside of Columbus. Florence had kept up with her mostly through their old Oberlin set, Berta Ramsey, Felicity Powers, Georgia McClanahan, and Roseanne Bostwick. Kitty herself dropped Florence the occasional note, a few lines to complain about how busy life was these days, what with three children and her charity work, not to mention the sort of entertaining demanded of the wife of a prominent businessman. Her letters were signed, "Ever your friend, Catherine." Rather unilluminating on the whole. Florence had to rely on her occasional lunches with Georgia, who lived in nearby Worcester, to get the full scoop on their old chum. "I think Kitty Faircloth was born to be Catherine Wexler," Georgia had told Florence not too long ago. "She came from money, she went to money. Oberlin was a brief departure where her artistic soul could briefly emerge. Now that lively creature has been stuffed away in some third-floor closet in the Wexler mansion, never to be seen again." "It's just so sad," Florence said to herself as she picked up her coffee cup and stood up from the table. She had time for one more cup and a quick reply to Kitty's invitation before it was time to go to the office and go over the plans for the opening of the cafe, which was only 2 weeks away. Oh, and there were the summer catalog proofs. Perhaps Nettie could look at those for her. "What is that?" Daisy asked. She'd entered the kitchen without Florence noticing and now stood at the stove, filling her own coffee cup. "The fact that you come to breakfast still in your dressing gown, or that you refuse to eat in the dining room like a serious adult?" "Let me remind you that I own my own company," Florence said as she walked over to the stove. "That's a true mark of a true adult in my book." Daisy held out the coffee pot, and Florence held up her cup. "Nonsense," the housekeeper replied as she poured. "Your company is just a fanciful fancy, a whimsical notion. You don't need the money, after all." "No, but I need the work," Florence pushed back. "I love the work. And if the last 5 years have taught us anything at all, it's that you can lose all of your money at the drop of a hat. An unmarried woman such as myself has to be mindful of such things." "You could be married," Daisy pointed out as she walked over to the kitchen table where the latest issue of Home and Garden awaited her. I'm not saying you should be married, but you could be. Lawrence turned and headed for the door. Could be, should be, would be. 7 a.m. is a bit early for these sorts of speculations, don't you think?
Early for who?
Daisy's voice trailed Lawrence out of the kitchen.
I have been up since 5 o'clock. That is the mark of a true adult in my book.
Lawrence ignored the old woman and made her way to the parlor. Sitting at her writing desk, she pulled out a piece of monogram stationery and studied her initials, F.E.G. Florence Elizabeth Grangerfield. If she'd married Arthur in January, she would have dropped the E and replaced it with a P. But she liked being an Elizabeth, even if not many people knew that she was one. Middle names were like little secrets, Florence mused as she filled her pen. As a child, she'd liked having a middle name that contained a Z, that most unusual of letters. As she got older, she felt a certain kinship with Queen Elizabeth. One even stronger now, she supposed, both of them just two unmarried ladies running the show. Florence smiled at that thought and then began her note. Dear Kitty, I'd be delighted to come to lunch on Friday. She almost added, I have business to conduct in Columbus, so it will be nice to mix it with pleasure. But then decided not to. It felt a bit like showing off to her, though she wasn't sure why. She finished the note with the simple, I do so look forward to hearing all about your children and seeing your gardens. It's always so pretty this time of year in Columbus. But not as pretty as the view of the Ohio River from her office window. Florence rose from her desk, her thoughts turning to the cafe and what kind of pies they should serve at the grand opening.
It's so marvelous that you make quilts, Kitty said to Florence as the guests took their seats at her finely appointed dining table. Don't you think so too, Roseanne? Why, back in school, Florence never so much as picked up a needle. So, dear, is the idea that you make these quilts and then sell them in a store?
Florence smiled and took a sip from her crystal water goblet before replying. I do make quilts, but I don't sell them. The company I run, the Milton Falls Quilting Company, sells quilting patterns and fabrics, that sort of thing. We do sell quilts to stores, Sears, Macy's, department stores, mostly in the Midwest and on the East Coast, though we are trying to break into Robinson's in Los Angeles.
So, these patterns you sell, do you have a shop? Roseanne Bostwick asked. Are you a merchant?
There was something about the way that Roseanne said merchant that made it sound like a job just a step or two above rag picker or chimney sweep. It's a mail order business, Florence told her. People order from a catalog and we mail them patterns and the rest. Perhaps you've heard of Marie Webster? She owns the Practical Patchwork Company in Indiana. I believe Mrs. Webster runs it out of her home, whereas I have a place of business separate from my house. We're actually about to open a shop on our first floor, though, a shop and a cafe.
Florence Grangerfield, a shop owner, Kitty exclaimed. What fun!
Georgia looked across the table and gave Florence a sympathetic smile before turning to the rest of the group.
I believe you're missing the main point here, girls. Florence owns her own company. She's the top man, or woman, rather. She's not some clerk who stands behind a counter all day.
So you sit in an office at the back of the shop, then? Felicity Powers queried.
Not exactly, Florence replied.
Giving up, she turned to Kitty. Do you make quilts, dear? They're awfully popular nowadays, aren't they? Oh, I haven't the time, but my sister-in-law stitches away night and day.
How is Penelope?
Roseanne asked their hostess, and the conversation swiftly turned to Wexler family gossip. Roseanne and Felicity seemed entranced, while Florence, Georgia, and Berta exchanged glances.
Dear Lord, I hope luncheon is served soon, Georgia mouthed, and Florence had to stifle a giggle.
Had it been this way at school? She wondered as she watched a maid carrying a heavy silver tray and struggle to put it on the sideboard without spilling anything. Kitty, Roseanne, and Felicity on one side of things, Florence, Georgia, and Bertie on the other? That's not how she remembered it. They'd been a jolly crew back then, always having frolics, as Kitty called them. Midnight swims, impromptu sing-alongs, silly things that made Florence feel as though she were really living. Not that she'd been unhappy prior to college. She'd had a marvelous time in high school, always a part of the popular set. But people thought they knew her because they knew her family, the prominent Grangerfields with business prowess and board seats and all the rest of it. At Oberlin, the name Grangerfield didn't ring many bells, and no one expected Florence to be one type of person or another, so she could be whomever she pleased. She'd taken turns as an artist and an athlete, a dancer and a maker of pots. She'd also signed up for business courses, though she wasn't sure why, only that her father had recently died and perhaps she thought it would have pleased him. Her friends thought it funny when Florence pulled out her accounting textbook or spent an evening in the library studying the principles of economics. Apparently, her interest in business still amused her friends, or at least some of them. But why? They'd all been such free thinkers, and only a few years ago.
Walter insists we go to the lake house this summer, Kitty announced when the topic of travel was raised by Felicity, who had just returned from a trip to Chicago. But it's such an old, damp place, even on the hottest days. I suggested perhaps we travel east to one of those marvelous Delaware beaches. I've heard Rehoboth is so awfully nice, but Walter won't hear of it.
Fred is just the same, Roseanne commiserated. Every plan I make is immediately quashed. Too expensive, too impractical.
I wish I could convince Dean to go as far as Cincinnati, Berta laughed. But he finds trains dirty and our automobile is a two-seater, so there's no way to fit the whole family in. Not to mention that he thinks Columbus is the center of the universe, if you can imagine such a thing.
Everyone laughed, as though the fact that their husband steered the ship and had the final say on all family matters weren't the least bit, well, depressing. Oh, Florence knew plenty of women who were the powers behind their husbands' thrones, the sort of women who knew how to suggest and manipulate and generally get their way by making their husbands feel as though they had come up with the idea to buy a new sofa or take a spring trip to the Carolinas. But what sort of life, or marriage, was that? Always plotting and planning, always pulling on the puppet strings. She knew all marriages weren't that way. Eula never spoke of Dan as though he had the last word on everything, and Dorothy and Wallace's marriage seemed equally as democratic. As for Emmeline and Thomas, well, that was a bit complicated. Emmeline depended on Thomas for money, but she'd been drawing her own paycheck for several years now, and though the money she'd made at the newspaper and now at the magazine wasn't much, it was something, a little sliver of independence that Emmeline relished and Thomas celebrated. He might have the final word on the family's finances, but he seemed to support Emmeline in her journalistic pursuits. Funny, Florence had never considered that she, Emmeline, and Dorothy were all working women. Eula, too, especially if you took all the years she'd worked on the farm. Now she taught classes and wrote copy for the catalog and patterns. Come to think of it, Bess had that part-time job at the church, and she still had children at home, and children were a job in and of themselves. Suddenly, Florence felt how fortunate she was to have such a lively group of friends in the Wednesday Bee, each one of them different from the other, yes, but having more in common than not. Their lives were rich with children and grandchildren, with work and quilts. Surveying her friends seated around Kitty Wexler's table, she wondered if they could say the same about their lives, which could have easily been her life, had almost been her life. She thought back to that library board meeting over a year ago, when she'd escaped to roam the stacks and stumbled across Eula's notice on the community board. "Do you like to make quilts?" it began. "Do you like to quilt in the company of other ladies? I would like to start a quilting bee in my home. Please let me know if you are interested." If not for that little handwritten note, Florence would never have come this far with the quilting company. Oh, maybe she'd have come up with the idea for it. She'd loved quilts and quilt making long before joining the bee. But would she have ever followed through? From the very beginning, she depended on Eula, Dorothy, Bess, and Emmeline for inspiration and encouragement. It wasn't long before she depended on them for patterns and catalog copy. And now they were helping her expand the business even further. "What are you smiling about, Flo?" Kitty asked, breaking into Florence's thoughts. "You look awfully happy. I'm wondering if you have some news to share with us." Florence looked around the table. All of these women had been at her wedding, her first wedding, the one where Arthur had declined to make an appearance. She'd not invited them to the most recent attempt at nuptials, thank goodness, though perhaps they'd heard. Certainly Florence had discussed matters with Georgia, who'd probably informed the others. In any event, she knew that this was the sort of news Kitty was after. Was Florence finally getting married? She smiled at her old friends, thinking of her new ones. "Yes, I do have news," she announced and was greeted by titters of excitement. She leaned forward. "We're opening a cafe next week at the Quilting Company," she announced, "and we're serving lemon meringue pie. I do hope you'll come." Thanks for joining us on the Quilt Fiction Story Guild podcast. We're reading Friendship Album 1934, a novel by Frances O'Rourke Dow, a production of Milton Falls Media, Incorporated. Copyright 2022, all rights reserved. Until next time, this is Frances O'Rourke Dow. Thank you for joining us.